Hello and welcome to another episode of Union Blue Radio. I'm your host, Sam Blazer. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Suva. Matt, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm good, Sam. We're back.
Exactly. It's been a very, very long time. too long, I would say. We've all been kind of busy with the start of the season. It's made things tough. You know, Allison's been out of town. I'm going to be out of town tomorrow. We were able to find a tiny little bit of time to actually be able to record this. You're in school,
I know,
and you're on the job hunt.
Things are crazy.
Exactly. Having a bunch of job interviews. So on our end, we are all over the place, but we're wanting to record so we can talk about the Blue Jackets and let you guys know our thoughts. What have you thought about the season thus far?
Well, I will note a part of our little gone missing issue is that the website made a switch.
That's true.
So we were hosted at Blogwin. We haven't really switched, but the hosting has changed. You may have noticed a brief little hiccup in your podcast feed. I think we've got that sorted out now. Knock on wood.
I think we figured it out.
we'll find out if you're somehow hearing this without having done it on normal subscription means. Yell at us and tell us what's up, and we'll try and fix it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we can talk about the Blue Jackets now. It's exciting. There's a lot going on. There's a lot happening. First off, though, they began the season against the Boston Bruins, and it unfortunately ended in a loss. What did you think about that game starting off? Because I was actually at that game.
You were?
And it was one of the odder games to be a part of because it was a tale of two halves almost.
Yeah, it felt in control. It felt within reach. And then all of a sudden, Marchand decided it was enough of that.
Yeah, what was interesting is seeing people after the game. Marchand, of course, had 5 points on the game, and a lot of people kind of made it out to be like, "There's nothing you can do," or "There, you know, like this need the Blue Jackets need to be better. This is how they always end up being." But I think on my end, there is nothing you can do. There's like, what are you supposed to do when a player just absolutely goes off like that? Like,
I mean,
Marcus Nudivara was turned into like a pretzel. There was nothing really he could do there.
I mean,
as best as he could, like, defend such a play.
This coming right off the World Cup, I think, was seen as justification for all of the hype that surrounded Marchand, and that
totally
all of a sudden he was this legitimately great player in the eyes of more people, even though I think for many, including Bruins fans, it was something they already knew about for a while. And this was without Patrice Bergeron, so pretty good showing for him, I would say.
And then it also had Zach Werenski's first point.
This will become a theme, I think, throughout the rest of this.
Exactly. You'll hear a lot about Zach Werenski, but let's actually just, you know, use that as a touchstone and we can, you know, go off from there. Zach Werenski, best ever or best ever play the game?
It's best ever.
I'm just you know, putting it out there right now.
He's doing some incredible stuff. That is for sure. Right now he is second on the team in points. He's a point per game player. That's dropped since then. He was second for a time. He's third now. I lost track of the page.
You know, I'm just dropping our expectations. You see, the problem is we don't podcast for a little while. You're not on your toes. You're not your normal self, and this is what happens.
It's ridiculous.
I know. We need to get you back on track.
He's just under a point per game. He's also one of the leading possession players on the Blue Jackets. Looking at Natural Stat Trick, the top three players for the Blue Jackets in even strength Corsi 4 percentage are Brandon Saad, not unexpected there, and then Zach Werenski and Dalton Prout. I think there's some uncertainty about that third one, but at the very least, to see Werenski doing what he has with logging some of the most minutes on the team is pretty nuts for such a young player.
Oh, I would tend to agree. I said this in my article last week by the Blazing Takes, is that I think Zach Werenski is already the best defenseman on the Blue Jackets.
It's possible.
And I it's hard to, you know, almost say otherwise. It's definitely a two-man race with him and Seth Jones, but the way that he plays, they're both so darn effortless out there, and the way that they play is so much different than some of the defensemen we've seen in the past that it's I feel like we may run into a problem later on about how to interpret how he plays, if that makes any sense at all.
I think that does. He looks, for my eye, and again, eye test not always the best, for my eye, I think your phrase of effortless absolutely makes sense. Everything seems
There's
so
no wasted
simple.
Motion.
It's the outlet passes are wonderful. The skating is smooth and fast. The shooting ability, he was often described at Michigan as having a seeing eye shot, that he could always get that shot through from the point. And it seems to be happening again now. He's quarterbacking a great power play. I will have to look it up later. I saw someone on Twitter suggest that Wierenski may be the best quarterback in the state of Ohio.
Dun, dun, dun. JT Barrett's not been doing so hot. And then I have some comments. I got some stuff I want to say about Andy Dalton and Josh McCown. But, you know, I'm going to bite my tongue for now. Also going on in that Bruins-Blue Jackets game, Nick Foligno had two assists there. What do you think about his bounce-back effort? Because thus far, I believe he has seven assists on the year. What do you think about what he's been able to do thus far? And do you think he's going to be someone... necessarily to look out for, but someone that's going to be able to keep up such a pace?
Well, I think it will depend in part on who he's playing with. Something that we had touched on a lot last year was that Foligno got a lot of heat for not putting up the kind of points that he did in his lucky shooting percentage year alongside Ryan Johansson. And you can credit that to whatever you want, but I think a lot of that is about the shooting percentage. And there's not so much that he can do. We can just keep shooting and you can just keep hoping that it'll work out. Maybe there's an injury issue. Maybe there's a teammate issue. But it's hard to pinpoint precisely what's going on. So to expect a turnaround, to expect Foligno to go back toward his averages in terms of on-ice shooting percentage makes sense. And at least so far, he's benefiting from that this year. I will note, and it's a game that we will talk about in a little bit, he ended up on a line with Saad and Wennberg for a little while in the most recent game against Anaheim, and that was a real force. That was a lot of skill.
That is the sweet spot, I think, right now. I don't think you'll find a better line right now for the Blue Jackets than them. Now, obviously, the loss to Boston hurt. They were able to bounce back 2 days later. Against San Jose, not necessarily bounce back in a win, but they were able to play another game.
It's true.
And
first sign of the turnaround for Bobrovsky.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of what ailed the Jackets so much last year in the what seemed like the inevitable spiral into doom was that the goaltending was just non-existent, completely absent. That Bob was sub 900 for so much of that first little run last year, and against San Jose, not a win, but a 950 for Bob in the loss, which was miles and miles better than what he had done at any point in the year prior to start.
He's continued on that path as well. What do you think is the key to his turnaround thus far? He's, you know, not necessarily kept up to 950 save percentage, but he's been able to, you know, play well above how he has done within the past year or two.
I don't know. I have to say this is it's a non-interesting answer, but I don't know. There's goalies are such an odd position that I'm not a goalie person, so I don't have a lot to say about if he's changed mechanically what he's doing. I know there are reports that he gained weight relative to what he had done the year before in a question of endurance versus comfort kind of thing. And he also had the World Cup to get warmed up a bit. And I don't know if we should actually put any stock in the idea that that has helped him get in the mindset sooner. Whatever exactly is happening, Bobrovsky,
was it gained weight or lost weight? I thought it was lost weight, but you could be right. I may be off base.
May have misplaced.
But no, you're all good. I just was like, I just thought
something
it was
about his training was
different. Yeah, he completely changed what he did in, to help out with his endurance and flexibility. I knew that was the case beforehand. That was talked about by Ian Clark. And what I thought has been interesting with him, at least watching, at least in these, you know, small sample of games, is seeing what, he does movement wise. You're always used to him, you know, making the flashy saves, doing this, doing that, but then giving up, like, you know, an absolute corker of a goal that, you know, that he shouldn't be letting in. It's nice seeing him not having to make so many spectacular saves. You know, he's made a couple. He can do it if he has to, but there's not much, like what's been happening with Zach Werenski, not a lot of wasted movement there. You know, he's much more sound positionally. He's, you know, putting himself in front of the puck and getting the angles that he needs so that he's in the right position. And I like seeing that from him. And that's just coming from, you know, my, you know, non-expert opinion of goalies. But watching him, say, comparatively to some other, like, you know, some of the great goalies, you know, Carey Price and, you know, Tukarask, the others, those are always seem to be the ones that come up, you know, not too much wasted motion, positionally sound, let the puck hit you, make the great save when you have to. That seems to be his MO thus far, and I think he's doing a great job. In that San Jose game, though, Zach Werenski had his first goal.
Fun times.
Exactly. The train isn't stopping here.
No.
Zach Werenski is going to keep doing his thing. Then after that, they had 6 days off, which is absurd.
It wasn't really weird.
It wasn't their bye week either, which is going to be happening later on, which is a whole different thing that I'm sure we'll end up talking about later this year.
But then followed that game up with a bunch of back-to-back situations, so
which makes no sense. They ended up playing Chicago. It was a win, their first win of the year. Werenski once again on the board, Foligno once again on the board, Bobrovsky once again fantastic. I think that game was the game that let us as a you know, fans, writers, bloggers, whatever you want to refer to, like, you know, the general populace as. You kind of saw what you think that the Blue Jackets are going to be this year. It's kind of their most complete effort. You saw them, you know, take Dallas to the woodshed and end up taking Anaheim to the woodshed, which we'll talk about later on. But this seemed like to be the game where, you know, they were able, you know, fight and make their way, kind of impose themselves against a Blackhawks team that people in the past have put, you know, as a Stanley Cup contender. And maybe they will be a mate this year. Maybe they won't. Their bottom six is a little bit of a mess. But what did you think about that game?
I think it was a comforting kind of game to watch.
It was.
That to see the Jackets turn around. I understand that the incredible losing streak to start last season was not necessarily driven by any sort of consistency. The beginning of it was the team played well, but the goalie played bad. By the end of it, the whole thing was just falling apart. That the streak was not necessarily deserved throughout the entirety of it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, it was this feeling of everything slipping away at the beginning of a season, that there was so much hype and hope that something could happen that would be interesting to watch. And by the end of it, speaking only for myself, I felt just disengaged completely. I continued watching because it's hockey and I love hockey, but to feel any investment in the team was really hard to do. And
without a doubt. And I think a lot of people felt that way as well.
And to see the team this year claw into a win sooner than 9 games into the season, at least in a personal mental perspective, feels really nice.
It does. And I think that's what the Blue Jackets front office, you know, Blue Jackets sales team, Blue Jackets social team, they need to be concerned about is, you know, overall fan apathy. If they hate you, then there's still engagement there, you know?
But feeling nothing
is probably the worst thing that can happen, because at that point, then people are like, all right, that's the Blue Jackets, whatever. I don't even care if, like, I have free tickets to the game. That's the stuff where you're like, need to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, having a good, you know, backbone of a good season is what makes, you know, kind of makes a team tick. And the next day in Dallas, they ended up winning 3-0. Bob shutout victory. Two wins back to back. Hartnell, Anderson, and Calvert goals. I didn't get to catch this game too much, but from what I saw from the game, you know, I only ended up catching about a period or so. They did a fantastic job of moving the puck. In years past, you've seen it where their passes just don't seem as crisp. They can't hit someone in a specific way. And it may be because of the amount of people that are, you know, like, they're not the amount of people, but like the defensemen that can actually pass now. Savard and Johnson, for like all their faults, they still have some pretty good passing ability. Ryan Murray, when he was in the lineup early in the season, has some pretty good passing ability. But you can see at times, and it's been a pass leads to another pass leads to another pass leads to a goal, and you could totally see it on the Anderson goal. That was the goal where it was just absolutely out of this world and something that you know, made you had faith of that about their bottom six, because it was just so darn pretty. We haven't seen that from a Blue Jackets bottom six in quite a while.
Josh Anderson looking like he belongs in the lineup, I think.
And he was got touted as, you know, this power forward that, you know, could possibly take over a game. And a lot of times when that was said, I was rolling my eyes. But he's someone that, you know, the way that he's been scoring, the way that he's been, skating, you know, checking everything, he's not looking tentative, and he looks like someone that could actually take over a game if he needs to. He hasn't done that yet, and he obviously still has time to grow, but that's in his game somewhere, and it's fun to watch him play this far.
Not spectacular by shot numbers, but at the same time, if you're about break even or break even relative to team in that kind of role, that's not bad to have. If your top couple of lines, however you want to define top couple of lines here, if your top couple of lines are doing all right and your bottom lines are at least aren't getting caved in all the time, got to make sense of something.
No, it totally does. It totally does. Now, after that, this is the Dallas game is the start of a road trip. They ended up going to the West Coast, where they ended up playing the Los Angeles Kings. The Kings, they ended up losing that game by a score of 3-2. In overtime, they actually were ahead for a good portion of the game and took it to them for quite a while. Against a team like the Kings, they obviously don't have a good goaltender right now. They have Budaj, and they didn't get many shots on him. Being able to get a point out of those kind of games, regardless of, you know, shot differential numbers and things like that, I think is always good.
I agree. At the same time, the Los Angeles Kings are really good. They played really stout defensive effort, and it was hard for the Jackets to make a lot of progress in that game. That they held a lead for as long as they did, I suppose, is encouraging. In my mind, though, the Kings game is a sign of how much further the team has to go to be truly good, truly great. Maybe they are good, but to be great, to compete with the Los Angeles team consistently, the Kings really held the Jackets down in terms of shots and shot attempts. It's rough. That's going to happen. It's an away game against the Kings, but at least they got a point, and points mean something.
And yeah, it does mean something. And I think it's tough to fault them on these Western road trips. You're out of your comfort zone. You don't know exactly where you're going to go from here. It could go badly. A lot of times some teams go in there and they absolutely get pummeled by Anaheim, San Jose, and Los Angeles. Getting a point to start that off was, I think, huge for them.
I will mention, this was the first of three really late games. Holy smokes, they are so late. I'm so pleased that the Jackets are out of the way.
I'm so glad it's out of the way.
Oh, that too. That game, the Los Angeles game, went into overtime. It did not end until between 1 and 1:30. Oh, my God. It was rough going the next day, I will tell you. I'm very happy the Jackets have moved to the East. I realize that the playoff imbalance exists, that only half the teams make it in the East and slightly more than half in the West. I'm willing to forego that kind of balance issue if it means a regular sleep cycle. That's just me.
Yeah,
I'm very selfish.
I completely agree there. I don't think that's, you know, giving that up, I'll do that just for a short period of time. But the next night, though, or not, was it the next night?
Two nights later,
they played San Jose, finished up the season series. They ended up getting that was probably one of the most definitive wins of the season. Against the Bruins, at least they were into the game. The San Jose game was just kind of a butt-kicking through and through, but much like Los Angeles, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And before this, their shot differential was pretty good, but this West Coast road trip kind of put,
hurt a bit.
Exactly. And you're going to have that for a period of time. And the start to the season has been very, 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 very tough. And that can't be understated at all. San Jose is also very, 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 very good. Their, you know, top six is good. Their bottom six, you know, has people like Joel Ward and like Patrick Marleau in it. And those and a lot of other teams will either be first or second line wingers. So, I mean, what are you to do? What are you to say? What did you think about that San Jose game?
Rough sledding. But the Sharks, as you've mentioned, the Sharks have not really had a whole ton of turnover relative to their team last year, which we may recall was a Stanley Cup finalist. They're all right. They have, oh, I don't know, Brent Burns and Joe Thornton doing crazy Brent Burns and Joe Thornton things. So
Joe Pavelski, you know, yeah, they have Tomas Hertl, Logan Couture. They're unbelievably built.
They're stacked. They're really good. They have great defenders. They have great forwards. That the Jackets managed to not let it get totally out of control is a credit to Bobrovsky, who again had another really good game. Just not quite enough there to overcome the menace that is the Sharks.
And I think when a lot of this is kind of a little bit off topic, at least from, you know, recapping the Blue Jackets season thus far. But I think when people talk about Pittsburgh and what they built, a lot of people need to be talking about what the Sharks built as well. The Sharks aren't necessarily heavy. They're not necessarily built on speed, but there is skill there all throughout the lineup. And you can see that the certain players, you know, the Justin Braun, the Mark Edward Vlasics, those are the kind of players that, you know, can move the puck nonetheless. They don't put up huge point totals. And I think people seeing those two teams in the Stanley Cup is kind of help what the Blue Jackets are doing now and moving towards more puck movers, a more balanced bottom six. And I've enjoyed seeing it thus far. And I think that, you know, the Sharks ended up beating them at their own game. So.
Yeah, yeah.
So it happens. You're going to run into that. But a nice way to end that road trip was with the Anaheim Ducks. The Anaheim Ducks, obviously, with Randy Carlyle, Antoine Vermette, Jared Bull. I'm just going to name all the, like, you know, players that they signed that I think were dumb to sign. They ended up getting their butts kicked by the Blue Jackets. There's a 4-0 victory by them. Multiple points from Winberg and Foligno. Saw it with a couple goals.
Gagne with two goals.
Exactly.
Very nice for him. That was a 3-4 minute span there in the first period where just everything was clicking. The first Gagne goal was great. Both Saad goals were very fun. One of the Saad goals, I don't remember which one because they were both assisted by Foligno. One of them was a really nice setup by Foligno going into the zone, pulling up and giving Saad.
It was beautiful.
Perfect pass wide open in the slot to just bury it. It was great to watch.
It's not something you see as Blue Jackets fans very often. You don't really see the skill plays all too often. You don't see like the one-on-one. When Rick Nash was on the Blue Jackets, you know, you saw that like a fair amount. He would go do something. Like Christian Husalius or someone else would just toss him the puck, and you would be like, okay, yeah, that's Rick Nash doing Rick Nash things. Anymore with the way the Blue Jackets have been built, it's, you know, pummeling the puck in. Boone Jenner tapping one in, and you see that, and you're like, okay, that's how the Blue Jackets play. But you've been seeing some interesting skill plays from the team thus far, and I think that Foligno's Saad goal is a definite sign of that.
Quietly, a nice game for Alex Wennberg as well, who is now up to, I think it's 7 points in the year, 6 or 7 points.
I know you've talked about this before. I'm a very, very big fan of his. He's going to be a very good center. You talked about how he's already at second line level, could, you know, borderline first in some ways. I think that, you know, he could be a number one center on this team. I said that in our roundtable chat. You know, I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't remember what it's called.
That's the problem. Is the picture of the roundtable chat is a rectangular table.
I know. I confuse everyone with that. I apologize to, you know, anybody who reads the site. Do you think Wennberg is there? Do you think Wennberg can get there? What are your thoughts on where he is right now? Because he's someone who's also been very, very impressive in the early start of the season.
So in the lead up to this year, and then also at the end of last season, there was a decent amount of criticism levied at Wennberg for not shooting enough. That he was too tentative with shots, and that made him not necessarily a liability, but certainly not as powerful a force on the ice as he could be. Mm-hmm. What with that glaring weakness in his game, if it's obvious he's not going to shoot, then why even bother defending a shot from him? I think, however, that undersells the value that Wennberg provides to the team. That he has been such a good assist player that his rate production per time on ice of assists has been spectacular, among the top 30 to 60 in the NHL. And to overlook that, I think, undersells him as a player. And I understand that goals are a more sexy statistic, that you can look at that and feel a lot better about how someone is contributing. But if he is that effective in primary assists, then it is certainly a value to the team. It is nice to see him playing so well, at least in that most recent game against Anaheim. Nice to see him and Foligno and Saad working out so well. We can hope that continues. We'll see how that goes. At the very least, I think Wennberg, from a purely point-based perspective, is a center that's doing as well as probably can be expected. And to ask for a whole lot more may not be entirely fair to the player. Or at least that's how I feel about that.
Oh, I totally agree. I think what people don't realize when looking at assists is, like, obviously they do contribute towards goals, but that they, on the point total sheet, they ended up, you know, counting the same. The secondary assists, some people refer to those as noise, which, I mean, it's a debate for another day about how, you know, some of the analytics people think of secondary assists.
Well, even if we were to discount secondary assists, Wennberg was still really good the past several years in primary assists, or at least last year anyway.
And what I think he does is that he can get to about 50. I think this year he could get to about 50, 60 points if he's playing with the right people. If he doesn't get, like, relegated to a bottom six role, I think he could get to that. And even if he does that with, you know, 10 goals, like, that's amazing growth for where he is at his age. And if he keeps, you know, taking steps the way that he has, I think he could easily be the first line center the Blue Jackets have been looking for. And I think that we've talked about this before on other podcasts. I think, you know, immediately anointing Pierre-Luc Dubois as the future number one center is dangerous stuff, because you put that pressure on him immediately, and he thinks he has to perform at this position, a position that hasn't played very much as. He goes back to the QMJHL with the Screaming Eagles, and he's looked, you know, okay at best for now. And I just don't see, you know, making him play a position that he's not natural with and just letting it happen. Just let it be. You have people in-house that could probably take care of it, and Wennberg's starting to prove that early on. I don't think it's guaranteed that he becomes that, but I like what I'm seeing from him this far, and I do think that he has the potential to get there at some point.
Some real Paul McCartney philosophy going on over there.
Yeah, all we need is love. wait, what?
What? That's not what you said.
Huh? But there are some upcoming games we want to talk about as well. Tomorrow, today, whenever this, yesterday, whenever this gets released.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. This is Halloween when we're recording. The Blue Jackets will be playing Dallas, a little bit of a rematch there. Friday, they'll be playing Montreal, and Saturday, it'll be at St. Louis. Between the three games, how do you think they're going to be able to do? Do you think they'll be able to, you know, keep up with these teams? These are not easy teams by any stretch. Montreal's one of the top teams in the East right now. St. Louis is, of course, always a strong team in the Western Conference. Dallas is ravaged by injuries, so they may end up being the easiest game of the week. But then again, you know, declaring any of these games easy is foolhardy. So what do you think?
I think it's a continuation of the rough sledding on the early schedule. We'll see how it goes. I agree that Dallas seems the easiest. At the same time, I don't know if I believe in Montreal yet. We'll see how that continues. I suppose it's hard to...
Do you want
to
believe? This is a Halloween episode, you know? Like, if I can get an X-Files reference in there, you know, I'm gonna do it. I'm going to do it. I apologize.
I'm so sorry, listeners, but the truth is out there.
The truth is out there.
What was I saying? Oh, I don't know if I believe in Montreal yet. I guess it's...
So it sounds like you want to believe. Every single time you start off with that point, I'm just gonna interrupt you and make you start over. Anyway, you don't believe in Montreal. Moving. What else did you have to say?
It's the Groundhog Day edition of the podcast. I suppose it's hard to discount Montreal when they have Carey Price.
Discount Montreal. I'm joking. No, they regardless of the Subban-Weber trade, I think that they're a fun team to watch, even just from their forwards. They have some players there that, you know, are extreme difference makers. On the back end, they're kind of shaky outside of Weber and, you know, Emlyn and Markov. But, you know, I don't think – if you have Carey Price on your team, you could probably put anybody out there that would look pretty darn good, at least on the wins and loss record.
A couple other Blue Jackety things we didn't get to talk about. Oliver Bjorkstrand is sent down.
That's true.
I guess that makes sense, given how he was not producing at all.
He looked invisible out there, which was something that I've never really seen before. When he had the puck on his stick, he was skating, he was moving. He wasn't getting the puck on his stick very often, and he kind of was just floating. And he had at times when he could find himself in the right position, put a puck on goal. He wasn't even getting that, and he was getting killed in possession numbers. He wasn't getting shots on goal. There wasn't a lot there to like, and I don't really blame them for sending him down. I mean, do you feel that way, or what are your thoughts?
I think it's unfortunate considering how exciting he was to end last year.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, they have the luxury of being able to send him down without waiver issues, and Cleveland is right there. So to let him work things out by getting more ice time with the Monsters, sure, whatever. Another Blue Jackets thing, Ryan Murray down with an injury, although mm-hmm. sounds like he could be back sometime soon.
Yeah, they would only have him as day-to-day. I want him back in the lineup, not necessarily because I think he's, you know, they're missing him so darn much, but I want to see how he fits in this lineup with potentially, say, like a David Savard or a Seth Jones, depending on where they put him, because I want to see how he fits in this with this team long-term, because you could make an argument, you know, with on this bridge deal, like how much they could, you know, put faith into them after this. If they want to sign him a long-term deal, if they want to, you know, just keep, you know, extending those RFA years, you know, and letting him walk. I'm interested to see how they handle Ryan Murray from this season on out. Another move that I was kind of puzzled with was the Sonny Milano move, bringing him in for the West Coast road trip,
but not using
and then him. Not using him. He's someone that I feel like, with the way that he plays, he's obviously very gifted offensively, but you'd think you want to give him some more AHL time to, you know, hone his defensive game, but having him up and just kind of being an extra skater, I guess, you know, at least for scout team purposes, you know, as much as like as there is a scout team in the AHL, you know, practicing against him, it'd be something, a different look. I'm trying to make some sort of sense out of it, but, you know, I really can't put it all together.
I suppose the logic of it is team on a West Coast trip, you need that extra skater in case of injury. Why him, though?
But I guess, you know, there are you're playing those rough and tumble teams. There's a strong chance that someone can get injured.
Yeah.
So if you have him on the in the roster, you can have fill him in with a dynamic player like him, and rather than someone like, say, Ryan Craig, and then at least that's the thought process on my end.
I guess it's unfortunate that he didn't get any extra time. At the same time, it's not as if whatever version of the third or fourth line has looked all that bad recently. Yeah. So how do you balance that? I don't know. It's not as if there was a massive skill deficiency by not using him, if that makes sense.
Oh, I tend to agree there. Another move sending people down was John Ramage, not too noteworthy in that regard, but Jonas Korpisalo also got sent down. I'm probably going to end up writing about this in the next couple days or so, but what are your thoughts on Korpisalo being sent down and McElhinney still being on the Blue Jackets?
Well, Korpisalo's was post-injury recovery, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So
they probably want to get some games in him.
Yeah, I think that's where I stand on it, that at least in my mind, the idea coming into this year was Korpisalo and Forsberg splitting time in the AHL, kind of sorting out who the primary backup or next goalie in line, I guess, was going to be, sitting around in the NHL and not getting a chance to play when Bob is playing, at least this year, playing well and will get most of the starts, it's not a real good use of their time and doesn't provide them more game time opportunities. So in that way, it makes sense that the two young goalies have returned to the AHL, and I suppose we'll see how everything shakes out for them in the next little while.
I tend to agree on that, and with Korpisalo, I know what they're doing, that they want to get him in there, you know, so he can get some games. McElhinney, though, hasn't been used yet this season. There's been a couple back-to-backs. I wonder when they're going to use him. You know, obviously, these are some tough games they're facing. It's the beginning of the season, but Bob, you know, needs to get some work in. But then at some point in the season, they're going to need to put McElhinney in the game.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the way that they're using him now, if they're scared of using him. I don't think they're necessarily scared of using him since he's on their roster, and they've kind of proven to me, at least within the past year, that they don't mind sending a player out of there if the timing's right. And the money's kind of null and void between the two of them. Do you think that do you think they'll use McElhinney anytime this month? There's like 14 games this month in November. They have to use him at least for, you know,
a few two or three them.
You know?
My impression is that they will. But you're right. It is very weird that they haven't done it for any of the back-to-backs at this point, including a back-to-back with travel between the Chicago and the Dallas games. So odd. Odd for sure.
I don't think they're going to end up using him this week. There's this, the way that it's spaced out, I think it's almost like, you know, getting days of rest for a starter. That's something actually I want to look into, is that they've talked about back-to-backs, but I wonder if there's certain times between goalie starts that is like the most ideal. That's something that I think would be very fascinating to find out.
Is there too many days of rest?
Exactly.
Not enough rest?
Yeah, for sure. I think that it could be an interesting study for someone, you know, much smarter than me. and more time. I really don't have the time to do it, so sorry. But I'm interested to see how they use McElhinney, because they're going to have some more opportunities and more situations where that's going to take place. On the NHL front, there's been a few things. Did you have anything else with the Blue Jackets in?
One thing to wrap up the Blue Jackets stuff. Natural Stat Trick has score and venue adjusted shot differential information. And we had talked about this on the last episode with Allison. It's an idea of trying to not throw away all of the information while still understanding that when one team is leading, the team they're playing against will probably push more to make up for that, and that'll screw with the shot differentials. So anyway, Natural Stat Trick has their own formula for how to deal with this. And in that standing, right now, the Blue Jackets sit at 15th in the NHL, which is about midway. And considering the caliber of teams they've been playing, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Jose, Dallas, those are all in the top 10. To have managed to claw their way up to just shy of 50% with adjusted possession and be just around the top half, or just within the top half of the NHL, not bad.
And they played some possession monsters. If you look at the people that are ahead of them, a lot of them are the teams that they've already played.
Number two and number three are the Kings and Sharks.
The Bruins are also up there as well. So, you know, Blackhawks. So these are teams that are performing well, and they were able to, you know, kind of at least stay level there.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to still be facing some tough teams, but once they start getting a face within the Metropolitan, I do have faith that they can take it to some teams.
It's a good start, that's for sure.
Oh, without a doubt. And I'm excited to see where they go from here, and I think this week is another test for them and to see how they end up adjusting. Because, I know, knock on wood,
hello?
They have not really been hit by injuries at all. And Matt's also wanting to like lean over and knock on wood as well. I'm not sure how many people realize this, but they've got some pretty good luck as of right now, and it's not gonna,
it's true.
Like, no matter who you are, you're gonna run into that a little bit.
Yep.
So not to be, you know, not even morbid, it's kind of just more like Debbie Downer. It's gonna happen at some point. It's the way that they adjust and the way that they put it together.
Realistic pessimism.
Yeah, it is realistic pessimism. But yeah, moving to the NHL, yes. There's been a lot of good storylines. Toronto with all their rookies. Very, very exciting. Edmonton starting as strong as they have. The Heritage Classic, which was kind of overlooked.
Yeah.
Very odd. And then Craig Anderson, his wife Nicole was diagnosed with cancer, played last night. And he was able to get a shutout and a win against the Edmonton. What is your favorite storyline thus far? Is there something that in particular that you've been interested in or something that you've been following pretty close? Because I know, at least for me, the Nicole and Craig Anderson storyline is brand new, but it's been fascinating to watch, at least from like a human perspective, because the Edmonton fans were clapping for him. Cam Talbot came out and was cheering for Craig Anderson once he got the first star. It was very, 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 very cool.
If you get a chance, be sure to check out that video of the three stars
ceremony.
I cannot believe that Craig Anderson was able to go out and play a game the way he did with what was on his mind, and to see the emotion just take over him as soon as the game ended is ridiculous.
You know where his mind was.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's incredible, and hopefully everything turns out all right for his family. He's playing on fumes, I have to imagine.
One would definitely assume. With that being said, and obviously it's more of a human storyline, on the hockey side of things, is there one thing that you've enjoyed?
I think the early season scoring boost. Now, I don't know if that's going to continue forever. Jeff Merrick on MVSW and on Hockey Central has posited a couple theories as to what's going on, that a lot of rookies being present in the NHL has something to do with that. And his suggestion is that it's rookies that are used to this style of play that's existed post full season lockout. And so they're completely adjusted and ready to jump in immediately. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I do hope that the scoring keeps up, although the past week has kind of seemed to depress that a little. That I think is the thing that's most interesting to me. I guess kind of driven to some degree by Toronto's team deciding to score like crazy and also get scored on like crazy.
Yeah, and a part of that, and the players that I've been most excited to see and, excited to watch have been Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid. I think Connor McDavid, outside of Sidney Crosby, is probably one of the best players in the NHL right now.
Yeah.
And this saying that, you don't even see his skills on display that often. He is just so blindingly fast. And it's so much faster than most of the opposition that he's able to skate down and almost get a breakaway, it seems, three, four, five times a game. And when you have those chances, even if you pot in one, at that point, that's like a fairly low percentage considering who he is. It's unbelievable.
He's crazy.
I'd really be interested in seeing him, not saying that Edmonton's not structured and not saying that Oilers don't run a structured team, but I'd like to see him more in that way, because it seems whenever I watch highlights, whenever I watch a game with him, he's always up and down the ice. But does anyone really even need that? Could he just do that and be okay?
Well, that was the question I had, particularly going up the ice towards scoring a goal. Do you credit that at the Oilers being loose and unstructured and young or whatever, or is that him just being outrageously great?
I just think him being outrageously great. Because there's also times I've seen Jordan Eberle and Milan Lucic, come in there and kind of, not necessarily smiling, but the way that they're skating, the way that they're playing is almost rejuvenated. It's ways that I haven't seen them play in a long time. And Milan Lucic is, about to be on almost a downward curve considering, how long his contract is. But as of right now, you're getting some very, very good play from him.
Yep. And the Oilers have gotten some decent play out of Talbot too. So that has helped them pick up the wins in the games where McDavid is producing. So good for them to come alive. Ultimately, I want to see McDavid succeed. I just wish he was in a place where I could watch him more consistently. Edmonton is just not on TV in the Columbus market.
That's true. We talked a little bit about, you know, what's happened already this season, recapping the Blue Jackets. But what's the one storyline that you've seen, now you've seen a little bit more, that you're looking forward to?
That I'm looking forward to. Well, from a purely Blue Jackets perspective,
either from a Blue Jackets or a fan perspective,
I want to see how well Werenski continues the season. He's been really great to start the year. We know all too well that brief little samples for players don't necessarily tell us all that much. Now, this comes with the caveat that his scoring is not the only thing he's doing, that he's playing well in terms of shot differentials, that he's doing this in really big minutes, all things considered, and he's doing it alongside a player who has a history of being pretty great in Seth Jones. Does it really continue, though? I hope it does. I'd like to think that it does. If it does continue, quietly, I think he might have something to say about the Calder discussion. And I know it's early, and I know that there is...
Wow, you hear that here, people? Hear that first. Matt Suva says, Zach Werenski is winning the Calder.
Wow. It's a
big statement from him, but you know, he's sticking by it early.
Quite the twisting of the words there. No. I think...
No.
I think Austin Matthews has anointed himself already with his 4-goal game. It'll be hard to take that away from him. But I do think that if it's down to two forwards and then a question of who the third nominee for it should be, if there isn't another forward that's so obviously great, maybe Werenski has a little something to say about who that is. Yeah,
for sure. And I think we talked about McDavid, we talked about Matthews, just touched on Matthews a little bit, but the one player that I think is going to... that I'm interested in following, and the team overall that I'm interested in following, is the Winnipeg Jets. They have a lot of fun pieces on the offensive, side of the puck, and they're not able to put it together right now. Their defense also should be not necessarily impressive, but should be like average to above average. And it's only been, okay thus far. They can't really get the goaltending, even though they sent down Pavlik, and their numbers, bear out that they should be a tad bit better, but they haven't just done it yet. And I'm interested to see how they do and if they're ever going to get out of the slump, because they have a chance of being one of the most exciting teams in the league and one of the, the least likely cities.
Well, they're missing a particular defenseman.
His name is Jacob Trouba.
Yeah, that is a storyline that seems to have kind of subsided, considering that we're paying attention to games happening now. But that's quite the thing outstanding for them. If they want to turn around, Trouba's really, really good. So to be lacking that player certainly hurts them.
It does. And from what I understand, it's not even about the money anymore. It's about what he wants positionally. And he doesn't want to be stuck the way that he is. And I don't necessarily blame him in that regard, but I don't know many teams that have an opening for that.
Yeah,
they'd be very, very young, and the teams that would be wanting to go to him, possibly going to Arizona, even then, they don't really need him the way that... some other teams are going to need him, and if he wants to contend, the pieces, there's not a lot there for him. And I think for now, and at least in the near future, he's probably going to have to end up sticking on the bench.
It's a tricky balance.
It is a tricky balance. Speaking of tricky balance, I guess that now is a good time for plugs, huh?
Wow. I don't understand that transition, but it's way over my head.
Tricky balance. I don't know where we're going. I don't know when we're ending. You might as well do it now. Plugs time.
Okay.
You can go first. I'll let you. Are you ready? You're looking at your phone. You're not totally sure what you want to plug. I can go first if you'd like.
I can plug. I can plug. I would like to plug. Are you aware of the company Bubbles, the tea and juice company?
I know of the concept of bubble tea.
Is that
the same thing?
Yeah. They serve bubble tea at North Market and Easton and the Player Small. They may have other... I think they have one in Worthington now. I don't know. They, in the spirit of the fall, have made a pumpkin chai milk tea.
Ooh.
And I will tell you, I'm not an advocate of pumpkin things. I'm also not...
I was about to say, are you, apparently a white girl?
I'm not an advocate of pumpkin things. I'm also not against pumpkin things, if you're into pumpkin spice lattes, if you're into pumpkin and all of your everything, then go for it. More power to you.
I'm a fan personally.
On a whim, I ordered the pumpkin chai milk tea. Real good.
Real good.
Real good.
I like it. I don't mind when you plug TV shows, and I don't mind when you plug music, but I really enjoy when you plug food or like a drink or something like that, like a restaurant. You're just kind of like, this is how I feel, and I don't really give a crap what you think. I'm letting people know that this is good.
You should drink that, is what
for
I'm
sure,
saying.
For sure. I'm going to plug the other podcast that I'm doing. I hope that's not too blasphemous.
Wow.
I know. I have one on NHL Numbers. It's called Watch the Game.
Nerds.
Exactly. And it's been fun. It's been fun to do it thus far. And just to let you know, I'm not leaving this podcast. We are sticking together through thin and thick and thin. And we just have been having a hard time of getting ourselves together. So, but I listen to that if you want to. They're on iTunes as well. But that's it for my plug. Anything cool else before we go?
I think that's it. Let us know if you notice any issues with the feed,
sure,
with the subscriptions, whatever. I think we've got things sorted out.
Site change has kind of made it tough, but we're powering through bit by bit.
We're chugging along. Be sure to visit the site. Check out weekly prospect updates from CBJ Prospects. Check out game recaps and aftermaths. Check out the coach with his really great goal breakdown.
Goal breakdown, yeah.
Hopefully, I should get back on the silly college hockey thing.
It's been fantastic, by the way. You know, you only had one post there, but I learned more there about college hockey than I have in like the past couple years of catching games here and there.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Speaking of, Ohio State men's team, still undefeated. Real weird. I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. And they've not been like doing it half-assed. They've been like kicking teams.
They took it to Niagara this weekend, which is nice to see.
They took them out big time. It was unbelievable. It was really quite great.
I hope that some editor somewhere used the headline Niagara Falls.
I'm sure they did, Matt. I'm sure they did. With that being said, you can follow me at @Sam_Blazer. You can follow Matt at @ZeekBud.
I'm so sorry.
You can follow the website at @BuckeyeSTHockey. Allison's not here, but you can follow her at AllisonL. Not sure if she needs it, though. She's got like almost 4,000 followers now.
Check out her stuff on BlueJackets.com.
Yeah,
she's
been killing it all
the place. Pieces going on.
For sure, 100%. And with that being said, until next week, bye.